from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum this morning, a California Superior Court judge has ruled that the state's teacher tenure laws are unconstitutional and disproportionately affect poor and minority students. The lawsuit was brought by nine plaintiffs, students who argued that the current seniority system keeps bad teachers entrenched in classrooms, violating their constitutional right to a good education. The teachers' union plans to appeal the ruling, which could dramatically change the way teachers are hired and fired across the state. And we'll discuss the ruling and its implications for California schools, students, and teachers next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. In Vergara versus California, a lawsuit on behalf of a student named Beatrice Vergara and eight other students, laws establishing tenure, teacher dismissals, and layoffs by seniority were all challenged on the basis of ineffective teachers causing harm to students and the worst teachers being concentrated in low-income schools. Yesterday, a Southern California Superior Court judge ruled in a landmark decision with national implications that California teacher tenure laws are unconstitutional for negative affecting minority and poor students disproportionately. I want to discuss the decision in this opening hour of Forum and its implications. And joining us here in studio is Jim Finberg. He's lead attorney representing California Teachers Association and the California Federation of Teachers. Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning.
We'll also say good morning to Ted Boutrous, who is also joining us for the hour from Los Angeles. He's a partner in Gibson, Dunn, and Crutcher and the attorney for the nine student plaintiffs challenging California's teacher tenure rules. Welcome, Ted Boutrous.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
Glad to have you, and also glad to have our own Anna Tentakulis, who's here with us in studio, education reporter for KQED News. And welcome, Anna.
Thank you.
Let's begin, Anna, by getting kind of an outline of what yesterday meant and really what was laid down by Judge Rolf Troy, who is a judge ruling in this, and ruled essentially it's too easily for teachers to gain strong protections in their jobs and too difficult to dismiss them when they perform poorly in the classroom.
Right. This was the first time when they're really was a full-scale attack on teacher employment protections in court. Of course, state legislatures have been taking up these issues for the last several years, but this is the first time a court has addressed them head-on. And essentially, the judge struck down five different statutes as it pertains to the employment rights of teachers. And he says that the current laws make it impossible to remove some of the most ineffective teachers because the tenure system assures them a job essentially for life, that seniority rules requiring the newest teachers to be laid off first were actually harmful, and that granting tenure to teachers after only 2 years, 18 months on the job, was almost comical, you know, offering far too little time for a fair assessment of a teacher's skills.
And he did say the evidence was compelling and even used language like it shocks the conscience.
That's exactly right. I think this, I said this before, I think the collective jaw dropped of many teachers because, you know, they knew this was obviously a big attack on their rights, but I don't think they were expecting the judge to be so strident in some of the words that he used in the ruling and really siding with the plaintiffs of the case.
And also using the California Constitution. I mean, this will have national implications. It's a landmark judgment, but equal education opportunity, he says, was not really moving forward under the present system.
Yeah, I mean, it was really interesting because it was the first legal opinion to really assert that the quality of an education is just as important as access to schools or sufficient funding. And there was references to big landmark cases and that this kind of fits into the mix of that. It's an incredibly closely watched case. And because it's really a bellwether that might prompt similar lawsuits in other states. And in fact, what we're hearing is that it is exactly what might happen.
I also want to get some background from you, if I can, Anna, before we go to Jim Finberg and Ted Boutrous. And this is actually a Silicon Valley-based group that brought this forward. Students Matter is the name of the group. They brought the suit. And the plaintiff's attorney was saying the workforce has, well, hundreds of thousands of grossly ineffective teachers. And the judge agreed with that.
Right. I mean, there was obviously ample testimony from the teachers union saying, actually, this is a small minority of teachers, you know, quote unquote bad teachers. And I think one of the
figure 5% kept coming up.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think one of the things you'll hear from the teachers union side is that they grossly made it sound like the entire system is full of these ineffective teachers. One thing I will say, though, the protections will stay in place for teachers pending an appeal. So, and this will most likely be appealed, this case, by the teachers union. So, that just to, you know, put that out there for
teachers. It will be appealed by the two teachers unions.
That's
and the
correct.
State of California as well.
That's correct.
As I understand it. And this was a 2-month trial, we should mention, with many witnesses on both sides.
Yeah. And just as a background on Students Matter, because many people didn't know about this group before, it's a Silicon-based education reform group financed by a gentleman by the name of David Welch. He's a 52-year-old entrepreneur, and he spent millions of his own money to finance this legal challenge, and he assembled, as you will hear, a very high-powered legal team. And reformers, you know, were saying, well, this is what we need in order to get, you know, according to them, real change to happen. We need to meet the teachers' unions with heavy-hitting, well-financed, high-powered legal teams to get this actually to move forward.
Anna Tentakulis here with us in studios, education reporter for KQED News. Ted Boutrous is a partner with Gibson, Dunn, and Crutcher, the attorney for the 9 student plaintiffs challenging California's teacher tenure rules. And Ted Boutrous, let's find out about the poor and the disadvantaged and the impact on them as you see it. I know there was a lot of Harvard research that was brought into this.
It really was compelling evidence, overwhelming evidence, as Judge Troy found, that these 5 laws not only injure students across California by subjecting them to grossly ineffective teachers that all of us would agree shouldn't be in the classroom. And in addition to that, Judge Troy found, and the evidence was, again, just overwhelming, that the brunt of this falls even harder on low-income and minority students. So there's a double whammy equal protection violation, the way I look at it. Evidence included, as you suggest, Michael, a study by Harvard professor Raj Chetty, who is a groundbreaking economist, and he was able to quantify the impact of one grossly ineffective teacher on a student's life, and it affected earning capacity, as Judge Troy noted and found that, and it was undisputed, that a classroom full of kids who had one grossly ineffective teacher would be affected by, among other things, being deprived of $1.4 million in earnings over the lifetime of that class. And there were other effects, where they would go to college, whether they would go to college, teenage pregnancy rates. And Dr. Chetty, in this groundbreaking study based on a massive quantity of data, showed that the effects of a grossly ineffective teacher haunt kids the rest of their lives. And as Judge Troy pointed out, he quoted Brown versus Board of Education from the U.S. Supreme Court and Serrano versus Priest, which is a leading California Supreme Court decision. If those decisions focused on the fact that education is the platform, is the way disadvantaged, poor, minorities, kids of all backgrounds can rise up and can participate in society, and these laws, he found, were preventing that and treating students unequally. So it's a very powerful opinion based on powerful evidence that the judge listened to over a 2-month period and then meticulously analyzed in this opinion. So we are so pleased with the decision, and I think this is going to change the face of education in a good way for teachers and students in California, and as Anna pointed out, have a ripple effect across the country.
Well, even Arne Duncan, Secretary of Education, said this will allow for a new platform to be, a new framework, I guess was his word, to be built for the teaching profession that protects the rights of both teachers and students. So you have the Secretary of Education, who seems to be on your side as well. And just to give listeners some more sense of what you brought forth here in terms of evidence, there is an independent commission on teacher competence which hears appeals of dismissed teachers and fires on the average 2 of 277,000 each year. So that seemed to be a part of what the judge was impressed by. But dismissals themselves are onerous and costly and time-consuming. That was a big part of your argument, wasn't it?
Exactly, and that 2 teachers a year out of 275,000, it's nonsensical. And this isn't all about firing hardworking, diligent teachers who are doing a great job. And you know, we cherish teachers, and that's why we want these laws straightened out and fixed and taken off the books. And as Judge Troy found, it could take anywhere from 2 to 10 years and $50,000 to $450,000 to dismiss a single grossly ineffective teacher. And we had evidence that, you know, there were teachers who wouldn't teach, who would show YouTube videos all day, who would insult their students, demean their students, tell their minority students they'd be housekeepers and wouldn't go anywhere. It would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to dismiss that kind of teacher. And Judge Troy found this is atrocious. It's nonsensical. And you know, the way I look at it, if we're going to have laws that regulate people who are with children, who are crucial to the success of kids, that's where we should really make sure that we have people who are performing the duties that we expect of them. And again, most teachers do. As Anna pointed out, we weren't saying that the vast majority of teachers fell into this category. It actually is 5% or less. But as Judge Troy found, that adds up to, according to the defense's own experts, 8,000 teachers. And when you start thinking about 8,000 teachers multiplied times 30 students a year, that's billions of lost earnings and injured lives of students in California for no reason at all.
Ted Buchis, again, partner in Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, the attorney for the 9 student plaintiffs challenging California's teacher tenure rules. And Jim Finberg is lead attorney representing California Teachers Association and the California Federation of Teachers, which, as we said, along with the state, will no doubt be appealing this. And Jim, there's a real question here of whether these laws are at fault for grossly inadequate teaching.
No, these laws serve very important purposes in promoting academic freedom and in helping school districts recruit and retain high-quality teachers. Teachers are well-educated and have a variety of job options. The salaries of teachers have dropped relative to other professions since World War II. And knowing that you cannot be fired because you're unpopular with the school board, but can only be fired for cause, is one of the few things that allows a school district to recruit and retain these high-quality teachers. The evidence in the case showed that, in fact, in California, a teacher who is not performing his or her job can be dismissed for unsatisfactory performance. And in the overwhelming majority of districts, that happens quickly and effectively.
Exactly. You speak about the evidence. As I understand it, only 4 of the 9 plaintiff students testified, and a number of them testified about teachers who had excellent records. And in fact, one was Teacher of the Year in Pasadena.
Correct. That was Christine McLaughlin. And although she was accused of being a bad teacher, she was Pasadena Teacher of the Year. And that shows how these statutes have nothing to do with the problems that were complained of, because Pasadena had no interest in firing Christine McLaughlin, even if these statutes had allowed dismissals to be faster and cheaper. Christine McLaughlin wasn't going to be fired because she was an excellent teacher. And to put it in perspective, there are 270,000 teachers in California. The judge says that the problem that he's identified has to do with 1 to 3%. That means that 97% of the teachers are doing an outstanding job. And Professor Chetty, who we discussed earlier, did a study of mobility, and he said that mobility is helped by good public education. And he found that 4 of the 5 most mobile cities in the country are in California: San Francisco, San Jose, Bakersfield, and Santa Rosa, meaning that the California public schools indeed are doing a very good job.
But is 2 years really enough to judge someone for a tenured position, which means essentially a lifetime position?
Well, first, it's not a lifetime position, because you can still be dismissed if you're not performing satisfactorily or if you engage in misconduct. Nobody wants people who are not good teachers, who are behaving inappropriately in the system. California Teachers Association absolutely believes we should get those people out.
But you would agree it's a long, onerous process, as was defined by Mr. Buchis?
No, actually, the evidence indicates that the overwhelming majority of teachers who were given a notice of unsatisfactory performance either get mentored to become effective teachers or resign voluntarily. The statistics that they focus on have to do with the very few cases that actually go through the formal process, and that's an anomaly because most of these cases are resolved informally. But the evidence actually showed, in terms of granting tenure, in fact, the judge concedes that the current process in Los Angeles is now that if there's any doubt about whether a probationary teacher is effective, that person doesn't get tenure. So the districts can evaluate probationary teachers and only give tenure to those who have demonstrated effectiveness. 18 months is plenty of time, is what the evidence showed.
And what does the evidence show about the worst teachers being concentrated in low-income schools?
Well, there is an achievement gap in this country. That's unfortunate, but that is not caused by these statutes. The evidence showed that it's bad working conditions in these schools. These schools are under-resourced. They don't have books. They don't have technology. They have high crime. The answer to closing the achievement gap is to give more resources to these inner-city schools and to put your best principals and teachers in these schools. Professor Susan Moore Johnson from Harvard said that if you improve the working conditions at inner-city schools, that's the best thing that you can do to improve and close the achievement gap. In fact, the false dichotomy plaintiffs present is that teacher interests are different from student interests. What Professor Susan Moore Johnson from Harvard says is when teachers have good working conditions, they do their best work. And when they do their best work, students thrive.
Well, let me go back to you on this, Ted Boutrous, because there's also research that was done by Linda Darling-Hammond of Stanford where she said poor schools with adequate resources and effective principals draw and keep effective teachers. That's pretty much on the record. And we're also I'm struck by the kind of Michelle Rhee versus Diane Ravitch argument that has kind of taken center stage in all this. But I guess my question for you has to do with the fact that maybe these are more systemic issues, inadequate funding and poverty.
Well, one of the things we made clear during the case is that we're not saying these statutes are the only problems and that there are funding problems, there are difficult issues that that we want to address as well. But that's not a reason to ignore clear problems. The evidence was basically undisputed, and the judge found this, and Jim Finberg is an excellent lawyer, but most of the arguments he just made, the judge emphatically rejected, having heard the evidence on both sides and made findings rejecting those arguments. And really, the parties didn't dispute that the last-in, first-out statute has a terrible impact on minorities and on teachers, too, because we had evidence, testimony from these wonderful teachers who were laid off because of their junior level of seniority, including the teacher of the year that Mr. Finberg just said Pasadena would never want to fire her. They had to. They laid her off four times because of this statute, even though she was a teacher of the year. So it's nonsensical. And the brunt of that on low-income schools, there was evidence that 50 to 90% of the teachers are laid off as a result of this last-in, first-out statute in low-income schools, minority-dominated schools. Disrupts their education. As the trial court found, it's a lose-lose situation because you have wonderful teachers who are laid off for no reason, and then kids, they're torn away from the students who they're teaching and mentoring and building up, and it's extraordinarily disruptive, and it shocks the conscience, as the trial judge found.
Let me go to this with you, Jim Finberg. I mean, the whole question is seniority. I mean, should quality be trumped by seniority? I mean, that's a big issue in many people's minds.
All of the experts agreed that experience makes teachers better teachers. A third-year teacher is almost always better than a first-year teacher. And having a layoff system that takes seniority into account, all the experts agreed, on average, leads to a better workforce. Also, seniority is objective, and it is a way of making decisions quickly without having disputes among the teacher workforce. So if the tenure and the dismissal process work so that you don't have the grossly ineffective teachers in the system, using seniority to do layoffs makes very good sense.
Isn't the argument from the union's perspective also that you have a stable job force and that there's really no evidence of appreciable harm due to these laws or where teachers are placed or transferred? I mean, on the face of it, this is what I've been reading, at least from the union side. And they've also been saying that this is all the agenda of a Silicon Valley millionaire and a corporate PR firm.
Well, having a stable workforce is very important to student achievement, and giving process protections helps achieve a stable workforce. High turnover from firings is bad for students. All of the literature from Professor Darling-Hammond and Professor Susan Moore Johnson show that high turnover hurts students. So the way to have highest student achievement is to have a good, stable, well-qualified workforce.
And what about Ted Boutrous' academic freedom and all this? There are those who feel once you loosen the system and undermine it, you can have people fired for all kinds of reasons having to do with what they express as their views in the classroom, or maybe because they're Muslims or all sorts of things.
The Judge Troy addressed that specific issue, and I think he said it perfectly, that the courts and the public employment system has due process protections that are meant to protect all employees from that sort of discriminatory or First Amendment violating activity, firing a teacher because of their beliefs. No one wants that to happen. But what the statutes do, these education statutes, they create what Judge Troy found to be uber due process, this incredible dozens of steps that a school district would have to go through to fire a horrible teacher who is harming students and haunting them for the rest of their lives. Hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars in some instances. There's no reason for that, and protections, as Judge Troy pointed out, the courts are there and will protect teachers in those circumstances under the rules that govern every other public employee. And if you think about the private sector, where we want to be innovative, collaborative, Silicon Valley, California itself was built on the notion that we want to bring out the best in people and we want those people to work as a team. We don't say we're going to fire the person who is performing at the highest level because they're junior. They're the new kid on the block. As I argued during the case, that meant Michael Jordan would have been fired when you had, you know, terrible people on the team. They get to stay because of their seniority. It makes no sense, and the protections are there to make sure there's a fair process without these laws, which you find in no other institution, no other public institution or private institution. And of all the places to have them where we are talking about the lives of children, it is nonsensical, and that's what the judge found.
Well, we're discussing yesterday's California Superior Court ruling on teacher tenure. What do you think of the ruling? You can give us a call now. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email any questions or comments and join the conversation by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or posting your questions or comments onto our website at kqed.org/forum. Talking with Jim Finberg, who represents California Teachers Association and the California Federation of Teachers, and Ted Boutrous, who represented the 9 student plaintiffs challenging the California teacher tenure rules. And we'll bring our listeners into this after the break. But I want to go back to Anna Tentakulis, who's also here, our education reporter for KQED News. And Anna, timeline on this, 15 days to object at this point, the judge's ruling, and then we can expect the filing of an appeal.
That's right. As I mentioned, the laws are still in effect pending the appeal. It'll first go through the intermediate appellate court and then would go to, in an appealed form, to the Supreme Court. So it's interesting, though. I think one of the things that we're missing in this whole debate here is, you know, whatever happened to kind of reform of teacher evaluations? I think when we talk about the effectiveness of a teacher, you would think that you know, there would be maybe more attacks on the evaluation piece. I mean, I know there's been a lot of effort to try to reform that in some way, but
there's been a lot of concern about what's called VAM, value-added methodology, which is essentially testing mainly.
Right. And so that's just something to keep in mind. I think that's something that's missing in the discussion.
Well, we'll see what listeners want to bring into the discussion. You are again invited to engage with us and to bring your own thoughts and questions or comments aboard here. We'll continue our discussion about teacher tenure and take your questions and comments after a short break. Again, give us a call, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Or post questions or comments on Facebook or tweet us. We're at KQED Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're discussing yesterday's ruling striking down the state's teacher tenure and seniority system. And let's hear what our listeners have to say. And we begin, Linda, with you. Hi.
Hi. I'd like to suggest that we follow the money here. Any instructor who begins to approach retirement is going to be up against the same thing that's happening now. I know of personally of a case. I'm a retired teacher. I know of at least one case where a teacher is 3 years from retirement. She's being hounded. They want to get her out before she reaches that magic number. And the money involved is going to be stellar. And so this is really about paying retirement to teachers. And there should be other ways. There are ways to eliminate bad instructors. And by the way, that Harvard study, he lost me when he said that teen pregnancies were caused by bad teachers. Lack of sex education causes teen pregnancy, not poor teaching methods, really.
Linda, I thank you for the call. And let's go to you on this, Anna Tentakulis. I mean, how much you said we need to think in this equation of some of the ways of testing teachers, but what about retiring teachers?
Well, I mean, it's clear that teachers who have been in the system for a long time get a good pension. And, I mean, this is the whole issue about pension reform. And, I do know of exactly those cases of where teachers feel like they're under pressure to get pushed out because they might get a lot more money once they do retire. That said, you know, there's when you take a look at the new teachers coming in, there's been recent studies that show, you know, the teaching profession has always been kind of this very quick turnover type of profession. But now it's even more so. And so the interesting thing is what this means for the future of the teaching profession if these job protections are actually removed. I think, you know, the highest turnover in terms of jobs, of people going in and out of a job is like law enforcement. And I think teaching now is second to that. So we really have to think about, you know, what that means for the future of our kids.
And we'll bring another caller on. Peter, that's you. Welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a product of public school education. My son went to public school at the beginning, but now I put him in private school. He's a teacher. He taught 1 year in public school, but now has moved to charter schools. I am very frustrated that the Teachers Association here on the call is not looking at the problems of the teaching profession, why we have such a push from parents for private school, for charter school, instead of recognizing the problems, agreeing and owning up to the problems of bad teachers and elsewhere and trying to be part of the solution. They're digging in their heels and closing their eyes and saying, these problems don't exist. That's why we have all the pressure for private schools, charter schools, and vouchers.
Well, in all fairness, I don't think, Jim Finberg, you're not saying these problems don't exist.
I'm not saying the problems don't exist. And let's look at charter schools, because charter schools aren't governed by these rules. And if these rules were the problem with public education, one would expect all charter schools to perform better than all public schools. In fact, the recent study by the Hoover Institution said that some do, some don't, and in general, they perform no better and many perform worse. So it shows that these statutes are not the cause of the problems in our education. Lack of resources, large class sizes are the problems with our schools.
But take this other question from Liz in San Jose, who says, is there no middle, because he was talking about solutions, is there no middle ground, perpetual tenure versus teachers' rights?
Well, of course, there needs to be a middle ground, and this is the type of thing that legislatures need to look at. The legislatures decided that it is important to have a stable, well-qualified workforce, and so you need to give some protections to teachers. And California Teachers Association welcomes that debate that takes that interest into account.
And Anna Tentakulis.
Well, I just wanted to add that, you know, there is differences of opinion within the ranks of teachers. I mean, I had pointed this out in some coverage on this, is that San Jose Unified has a teachers union that has gone to the State Board of Education asking to be their teachers to be evaluated in 3 years' time versus the 2 years' time that most districts allow for a tenure. And the idea here is that, you know, yes, let's try to strike this middle ground. We're willing to, you know, work toward that 3-year tenure, you know, possible tenure.
A lot
mark.
Of states, it is 3 or 5 years.
Exactly.
California is
and in
anomalous.
Doing so, and in doing so, we can get more, you know, professional development. We can get more mentoring. And so we will be better teachers at that point.
I want to read some online comments and emails. And actually, Ted Boutrous, before I read a number of these. I'd like to get your response to one from a listener named Victoria, who says, on two occasions, parents of children who were acting out in class tried to get me fired because they claimed I was picking on them. I went on to gain a reputation for being a talented, fair, and dedicated teacher after obtaining tenure. I never would have made it if it weren't for tenure. I would not become a teacher in the scapegoating climate of today.
I don't think that's correct. The rules that govern and all other employees, good management by superintendents, principals. You know, look, kids, you know, with demanding teachers, there are always going to be complaints. We all know that. And we want teachers who are demanding, and the person who wrote in sounds like a terrific teacher. Nothing about the ruling will change the fact that teachers will have protections and be able to teach and be demanding their students. In fact, that's what we want. Many of the complaints in the case and the stories we heard and the testimony we heard were of teachers who weren't teaching, who weren't challenging their students. And that's what we want. We want teachers who demand the best from their students and make them better and prepare them for citizenship. So that teacher that wrote in would be, we want her to be fostered and supported. And that's what this case is really about. And on the tenure issue, as Judge Troy found, the 3 to 5 year period, that's what Mr. Finberg's witnesses testified and the state defendants' witnesses testified would be better both for students and for teachers. So these laws, there's universal agreement that the laws that are on tenure in California in this trial were bad and were harmful. So why not come up with a better system that supports students and teachers like the one that made that comment?
Well, Jim Finberg, here on the other side is Kim, who writes, I have the utmost respect for the teaching profession, but have seen firsthand in my children the effects of a bad teacher. It may be only 5%, as the CTA claims, but it is 100% of the teacher of that subject for my kid for an entire school year. Unless you come up with better ways to evaluate and get rid of bad teachers quickly, I have to support this ruling. The cost is too steep.
Well, the evidence showed that in most districts, when teachers are given a notice of poor performance, they get mentoring or they are encouraged to voluntarily leave the profession. And CTA has supported legislation that would make the process even more streamlined. To respond to two points about the process and academic freedom, the real issue here is whether there's an independent decision maker. In the process that Judge Troy contrasted to the current process, there would not be an independent decision maker. So school boards would be making decisions about whether or not to fire teachers. When you have the school board making the decision, you lose academic freedom. So the teacher who's teaching about Islam or global warming, or the teacher who just called in and gets the complaint that she's too much of a disciplinarian, if the school board is making the decision, that teacher loses academic freedom, and that is not good for our students.
And that brings up another question, Anna Tentakulis. Let me go to you on this. I mean, how much of this whole the calculus of what we're talking about here has to do with bad management when there are problems?
I mean, that's huge. I mean, one of the problems that teachers say they leave a school, the profession, is because they have poor principals. They have poor administrators. And so, I mean, when the teachers union says, you know, we're being a scapegoat, I mean, that points to management that is also poor, that is not responding to the teachers' needs, that is not providing the resources and the mentoring and the professional development they say they need. And I think it is interesting to talk about if the ruling is upheld, because these decisions, as you mentioned, Jim, would get kicked to the school districts and they would have to renegotiate contracts to comply with the judge's decision, or at least not enforce provisions of the law ruled unconstitutional. So therein lies a lot of problems, too, because you'll have a hodgepodge of all kinds of, as you had mentioned, ways to deal with tenure.
And let me bring another caller on. Keisho, that's you. Good morning.
What have we learned from other states and locations that have eliminated teacher tenure in terms of the impact on student outcomes and teacher turnover?
Good question. Anna, can you help us here?
From what I understand, it's still mixed. The states that have eliminated these type of job protections, I don't think there's still substantial research to find out whether or not it has done good or bad for students.
Jim Finberg?
Well, it's still very early. There's the District of Columbia and only 3 states, I believe, so far, and we don't have enough time to know the impact of it. But addressing Mr. Boutros's point about our experts, Professor Rothstein, in fact, said that in 2 years was enough time for districts to know whether a teacher was able to be an effective teacher, and that if you wait longer than that, that you have the problems with not giving job security to teachers. So he, in fact, said that 2 years is
it's really
the,
less
is
than
the
2 years, though,
deadline.
When you cancel out the summers. I mean, it boils down to 24 months minus 6 months, which would be 18 months.
That's correct, but the evidence from the superintendents at the trial was that that's sufficient time if the districts are doing their job and evaluating teachers to make the decision. And as the judge concedes, you only have to give people tenure if they have demonstrated effectiveness. When in doubt, don't promote.
Go to another caller, and that's you, Doug. Welcome.
Yes. So one of the things that Mr. Boutros said a little while ago was a rather loud flapping red flag for me, which is when he said that nobody would want to dismiss teachers because of their religious beliefs. That's patently false. There are plenty of examples of many headlines where school board members have campaigned on the desire to prevent people from certain religious beliefs or sexual orientations or political beliefs from having access to students in the classroom. And I would say that if we're talking about creating a circumstance that makes us much closer to being able to dismiss teachers for cause in those sorts of unfair ways, it would be really easy to speculate that a school district would want to start dismissing for cause teachers that are part of the bargaining team for the teacher's contract. These things are happening, and for Mr. Boutros to deny that this would be an outcome from firing teachers for cause is patently false.
Ted Boutros.
Well, a couple things. First, the law would preclude firing someone because of their religious beliefs or because they're participating in bargaining on behalf of the union, irrespective of these dismissal statutes. These dismissal statutes add about 20 layers to a process that already exists and already makes clear that you cannot fire someone for their religious beliefs or other factors like that. And the fact that it's happening now means these statutes aren't even preventing people from trying it. Of course we don't want that happening. On the tenure point, you asked earlier, Michael, about the states that don't have tenure or that have longer periods of tenure. They're doing way better. California is 47th in the nation on these criteria. It can't get any worse. And the court, Judge Troy, found that under this really short tenure period in California, we have situations where teachers are getting tenure before they've gone through the training process and been credentialed. That is nonsensical, as the judge found.
Let me thank the caller and go to some of your emails. Here's Bill, who writes, fire at will is no way to terminate credentialed teachers. They deserve a hearing and the opportunity to improve. That's what tenure means, a fair process. If due process for teachers is abolished, the apologists will blame others for the floundering students who get no support for learning in their homes. And Michael writes, if you look carefully at all the estimates of the number of chronically ineffective teachers, the numbers being put out there work out to between 1% and 3%. Turning that statistic around, that means that 97 to 99% of California teachers meet some definition of effectiveness. In any other endeavor, a system that works 97 to 99% of the time would be considered a roaring success. Vergara does not address the true crisis in public education. In the rest of the world, any management system that ran the businesses in the manner that school districts administer the schools that the Vergara plaintiffs are concerned with would be fired. Instead, in education, they get raises and promotions. To make an analogy, the reasoning in Vergara as to why some schools are underperforming is the same as saying both GM and Chrysler went bankrupt because their assembly line workers weren't good enough. And here's a couple of comments from the other side. A listener writes, this is excellent news. As a parent with two children in California public elementary schools, I welcome this as the first move toward making public schools responsive and accountable to parents. The next step should be a drive for a proposition that allows individual teachers to bargain for compensation without union representation and the abolishing of all seniority-based preferences. This is a great decision for customers of K-12 education, that is, students and their parents. It's not a great decision for those who see K-12 education primarily as an employment service generating well-paying jobs and lifetime job security. Just a couple more from that side of the fence. Mike writes, I've worked for over 6 years in a local school district. I see many tenured teachers who are consolidated and are allowed to bump other newer teachers. One example, I recalled, handed just worksheets and barely spoke to students. I was later told that she has done this at several schools and has simply been bounced from one school to another. At another high school, I met a teacher who never left his chair, also did no teaching, testing, or grading. He simply used a scale to weigh the students' work, and if it weighed enough, you could pass the class. Signed, reluctant member of a local teachers' union. And another listener writes, it's unfair to the students to be stuck with bad teachers. Unions should only be used for safety and quality of the workplace. If you need a strike for more pay, you're underqualified and should be fired. If you're that good, the market will let you know and you can move jobs. And that's how the poor schools get stuck with bad teachers with the tenure agreements in place, because the bad teachers get stuck at the poorer schools. We'll go to more of your calls. We'll go to San Jose and welcome Sam. You're on.
Teaching is probably the most important job for the long-term health of the country. These people that are getting tenured, they're not gardeners. These are people that are taking care of our children. So if the tenure issue is such a wonderful issue, I think we should tenure Toyota mechanics, nurses, and talk show hosts. Can you picture what would happen to your car? I'll take my answer on the air. Thanks.
Okay, I think that's to you, Ted Boutros.
Well, I think our points is that the school system should operate the way other public institutions and other private companies do, where we reward high performers. If someone is grossly ineffective, and that's what we focused on, that there's 1-3%, not just ineffective, but grossly ineffective. People who are not meeting the basic requirements of teaching, who have tenure and who cannot be dismissed except for millions of dollars after years and years and years, and kids are then subjected to those teachers. And so we really are saying, let's have our school system managed and operated the way we run our other institutions and highly successful institutions. And if someone's doing a terrific job, let's reward them, let's compensate them, let's promote them. But let's not have a system that just turns away from performance and then inflict that on students who will then be haunted by it for the rest of their lives. So we really do think the school system right now stands out as an anomaly for nonsensical reasons, which the judge found shock the conscience and have these terrible effects on students, in particularly minority and low-income students. So we just want a fair system that treats teachers fairly, that protects the rights of students, and prepares them for their lives as citizens of California.
Let me go to more of your calls, but first, Joanne writes, I'm wondering if this ruling affects instructors at California community colleges. It does not. And Catherine from San Rafael is our next caller. Catherine, you're on. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I was a teacher for 30 years, a tenured teacher, and I'm also a school psychologist now. But my real concern is the quality of education because of lack of funding, lack of support for teachers, and what we're facing every day in the classroom. And I don't feel that there's any real concern with parents. And some parents are, yes, concerned, but to deal with children that are coming in with the multiple problems is very difficult. Raising class size and not really raising salary, it's not an easy profession. And I feel that the tenure system maybe needs to have some changes, but what we're looking at is a corporate takeover of education.
Anna Tantakis, yeah, thank you for that call, Catherine.
I mean, I think you'll hear a lot of folks on the other side, teachers, that say this. I mean, essentially, what Boutros and the legal team and Students Matter is doing is pushing its way toward privatization of public schools and promoting charter schools, and that this is just an example of pushing that agenda on our schools. And I think that it is important to mention that David Welch, who is behind Students Matter and who put together this legal team, he has virtually no background in education policy. He obviously does have some big ideas and drastic ideas of how education should change. And, without proposing specific alternatives, he said he would talk about the case with legislators and urge them to pass policies that would fall in line with what they're trying to do here.
Jim Finberg, here's a listener who writes, all of the anecdotes about bad teachers are clear examples of problems with management. In well-run districts with adequate resources, it's not such a burden to remove teachers if administrators do their jobs. The failure of administrators or the unwillingness of voters to fund better staffing should not be taken as an indication that the law doesn't work. Surely the law could be improved, but failing districts shouldn't be the metric for whether or not a law works.
Well, that is what the evidence showed in this case, and there were a few anecdotes about districts such as Oakland that are underfunded where things aren't well managed and don't run well. But in the overwhelming majority of districts, these laws do work, and the problems with our schools lie elsewhere, as the last caller just said. Smaller class sizes, more resources, better technology. Help teachers to do their best, give them the tools, and they will do the job.
So, Ted Boutrous, is this really about privatization of education and corporatization of education and maybe an agenda of a Silicon Valley millionaire?
For asking, Michael, because that is just absurd. First of all, what we have here is a private citizen and a foundation that has broad support from Republicans, Democrats, trying to help the public school system. I went to public schools. My partner, Ted Olson, who's also working on the case, went to public schools. We love public schools. That's how we have been able to succeed so far in our lives and our profession. And what we're trying to do is take away these laws that are hurting the public school system, that are hurting teachers. And Anna suggested that teachers are on the other side of us, is that although all teachers are against us and we're against teachers. That's wrong. We have had hundreds of teachers weigh in support of us. They testified in the case about in support of our case. So it's not a teacher versus students matter. We think teachers matter enormously, as the trial court found. So this attempt to distract from the case and suggest it's some Silicon Valley takeover of the public school system is silly. But we should want private citizens in Silicon Valley and all over our state to join together to try to improve our public school system for the children of California. That's what this is all about. And the fact that the teachers' unions and others are coming up with this demonization, I think, really shows you they don't have any evidence. That's why they lost yesterday. That's why Judge Troy emphatically rejected every one of their arguments, because all they have is this kind of political rhetoric that has been succeeding. But when you get into court, you have to have evidence, and you have to apply the law. And when that happens, the laws can't survive, and that's why Judge Troy struck them down.
And we go to more of your calls. Carrie, join us. Hi, you're on the air on Forum.
Hi. I had a teacher in fifth grade that I'm struck by the guy who's using the word haunted, because basically this teacher ruined my whole school agenda after that. And at the time, my mother was the only divorced person around and felt already a little bit, different, and didn't feel like she could stand up for me. So she didn't really do anything. And I think when you have parents that don't feel empowered to do anything, I don't even think you know the scope of how bad some of the teachers are. Because on the other end, and I was in Larkspur in a good area, but this particular teacher happened to be extremely cruel. And so I don't remember any teachers after her. I remember teachers before her, after her. It's like a blank. And then my sister, on the other hand, in Fairfax, had a really bad teacher for her son. And because my sister is, married with a family and has money, she felt empowered enough to go and address that. Whereas I think there's a huge group of people who don't even know how bad some of the teachers are, because not everyone feels like they can stand up for their kids in situations like that.
Let me thank you for the call. And let me sort of go off that call for a moment with you, Anna Tantakalos. I mean, it's very difficult to measure harm that's done by teachers. Because a lot of that is subjective. But there's been a lot of, especially from the Michelle Rhee camp, let's call it, as opposed to the Diane Ravitch camp, a lot of talk about, California being the lowest of developed countries in math and blaming it on teachers and seeing teachers as really the fault of that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, time and time again, there's every time you hear that assertion, I feel many teachers will come back and say, because we need to be trained better. And I think teachers, you know, universities that are teaching prospective educators aren't doing enough. In fact, there's been studies out showing that they're not doing enough to prepare teachers when they do go into the classroom, that there should be more of a clinical approach to getting teachers experience before they're actually put into the classroom. I think that, you know, teachers, when you talk to students, when I talk to students, they say that, you know, the thing that they remember in school is that favorite teacher that made them feel special. And you can remember those teachers in your own lives. And so, I mean, it's part of this, the heart of this whole debate here is just that personalization and how well someone can connect with a student to provide a better education. And I guess that's what I have to say. I think we need to train more teachers to provide that personalization.
And let me read some more of your emails here on the pro-decision side. This is Dan who writes, I come from a family of over 100 years combined work experience in California public schools. And although three of my immediate family members are currently members of the teachers union, the unions are losing credibility by debating this issue. If the union is arguing that these laws are in place to protect and retain good teachers, then the laws are clearly flawed. Your representative from the teachers union says bad teachers should be weeded out. What is the union doing right now to make sure that happens? Shame on the teachers union. Excuse me. And then another listener on the pro-decision side, Lance writes, speaking as an ex-member of the Congress of Industrial Organizations, union seniority issues are across all job sectors, not just education. Currently, a young 20, 30-something that's more qualified will fall victim to last hired, first fired when it comes to budget cuts. For unions to stay competitive and relevant, they'll need to drop the seniority system as a metric for competence and pay. And on the pro-union side, here's James who writes, as a retired teacher who supports closing the achievement gap, I fear that should this decision not be overturned on appeal, the unintended consequence will be to drive good candidates out of the profession. How does this decision actually promote the entrance of good teachers into the profession? And another listener, Rosie from the Piedmont Unified School District, says, I'm a teacher in my 13th year of teaching. I think I'm a very good teacher, and I keep getting better each year, but I'm getting expensive for my district. Teacher in her first year with a maximum education earns $48,000 in my district, in her 25th year, $88,000. How can we be sure this ruling will not allow districts to replace veteran teachers with cheaper, younger teachers who are often very young, don't have families, and are willing to work longer hours for less pay? Well, you can continue this discussion online by going to kqed.org/forum. I want to thank our guests. Thanks to Anna Tentakulis here in studio with us, KQED education reporter. Thanks to Jim Finberg, who represented the plaintiffs in this case. And thanks to Ted Boutros, who represented the plaintiffs. And thanks to you, our listeners. Another hour ahead, more on education with Michael Roth. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.